friendly competition was certainly with us, but we weren't really ever considered as contenders.
So you were the captain of the 2015 American team.
Right. So the way the team is made up is it's really just two guys. So it's the chef, who we call the candidate, and then the, what the French would call a commis or apprentice. And so the chef basically kind of drives the team, and then, you know, the commis is 22 or younger. Like, that's one of the rules. So it's really basically, you know, a chef and a very young apprentice, you know, generally you're starting out together, you know, they're 19, 20. And it's really challenging to find someone at that age who has the maturity and tenacity to and talent to stick with it.
And then you have a supporting staff that accompanies you, but right, it's actually so not cooking, or you, it's only two people that are doing all the cooking?
It's two guys in the kitchen doing all the cooking.
I didn't realize that over 5.5 hours right. straight.
Yeah, so just to kind of give you, sum it up in like the craziness of it all, I mean, it's 5.5 hours. You're doing 14 of a plated dish, 14 portions, and then you do a meat platter that you design, you know, kind of a platter that's as theatrical in presentation as you can. And there's 14 portions on that as well. So at 5 hours, you present your plated dish. And then 30 minutes later, you present the meat platter. And for both of these, you have 3 minutes to get all of this food out of your kitchen. And, you know, our run in 2015, we had 40 recipes and 130 different ingredients with just the two of us. And then we had a coach, you know, who was across from us, kind of running the timers, keeping us on track and on task.
So Bocuse invited the Americans in, is that correct? As I read in the book, that he talked to whom you worked with, then Thomas Keller, to bring a team.
Yeah, so interesting story with Paul Bocuse is that, you know, when he was in the French Resistance in World War II, he was actually injured and was taken to a GI hospital, given a transfusion of GI blood. And so ever since then, he's, you know, said, I have American blood running through my veins. And so he has a very strong affection for our country, is very thankful for what we did for his country during that time, and him personally. And so he's one of the few chefs who flies an American flag over his restaurants. And so as you know, the competition began to really evolve in the early 2000s, you know, he reached out to Chef Keller and Danielle Belloud and said, you know, hey, we really want the U.S. to have a stronger presence. We know you have amazing chefs and amazing restaurants. We want to see the best coming out for this competition. And so that was really when Bocuse d'Or USA kind of really got serious and formed in 2008. And that organization has evolved into what's known today as the Mentor Foundation. And we work together as really Bocuse d'Or is the pinnacle of what we do. But there's grant programs for young chefs and young chefs competitions, commis competitions that we have in place to really, you know, the goal is to inspire excellence in the coming generations of young cooks across America.
And you do tryouts around the country for the teams, for the American team, don't you?
Right. So it's an application process. And then after that, they select, you know, the chefs who are going to compete. And then we have a competition where this past, you know, I think it was about a month ago, we had three guys compete in Las Vegas for the right to represent the U.S. in the final. And then in April, we'll go to Mexico City, and we have a continental selection where we have to compete against the countries North and South America. So Canada, Mexico, you know, Brazil, Chile, whoever it might be there. So then I think there's 5 or 6 slots. Top 5, top 6 go to France in January. So it's a long haul, a lot of steps along the way to get to the final day.
So talk about the competition itself a little bit. You're given it is a mystery box. You get, or you don't know until you get there, what you have to work with.
Yeah, they keep you on your toes, and it actually changes every year. So even this coming year, we don't know what will shift and change. You know,
this will be 2019. The next
2019
one.
January, right. Yeah, end of January. So, yeah, basically the way that they do it is they assign a meat protein, right? And so in our case, it was guinea hen in 2015. This past year, it was poulard de Bresse, the famous bluefoot chicken in France. And so they let you know what that is in September. So you have about 4 months to kind of get that together, figure out what you're going to do with it, figure out the presentation, and then you have to train afterwards. And then in November, they let you know what the plated dish was. My year, it was brown trout. We had 10 brown trout, and that was it. You had to kind of do your main presentation with that. And then there was also, that year, there was a market, and it was a mystery market. You didn't know what was going to be in there, and you had to shop there the night before the competition. And then after your shopping, they assigned a mystery ingredient, which you also didn't know what was going to be, and you had to feature that prominently on this plated dish with your trout. So
what was the mystery ingredient?
Celery. of all things. Yeah.
Really so, exotic.
Yeah, we just did peanut butter and raisins and, you know, we're done. No, so, and then this past year they changed even that. So then it became a vegan dish for the 2017 team. And then the market shifted. So then they were like, okay, we're going to actually let you know what's in the market and you can bring two vegetables from, or fruits from your country of origin so that you can kind of feature them prominently, because 20% of your score is how well you represent your country, and that's one of the key things. So every year they keep you on your toes to kind of never know exactly what's going to happen, and you know, make it so that it's not just, you know, robots training over a period of a year
so
or something.
The
like
2017
this.
The vegetarian vegan, this was the first time they had chosen a vegan theme. Was
yeah, it was quite a surprise. We had an indication that maybe it was going to shift from, you know, what was traditionally always a fish plate, because it was like the fish theme would be announced, and they would let it, and they shifted the language to say would it be a plated theme instead of fish. And so we kind of thought, oh, it's gonna be vegetable, but, you know, vegan's different than vegetarian quite significantly. Mm-hmm. So that was a little bit of a shock, and it was a super challenge for us, you know. And in you're kind of in this middle of, you know, the way the training goes is you basically, you know, you're putting together kind of like a gymnast where you're all the twists, turns, tumbles, etc. And then once you kind of say, all right, this is it, then you lock it into, you know, your program, and then you put it to music, and then you have to practice that. You know, nobody's going to the Olympics in you know, figuring it out, you know. So it's really kind of the balance between finding that, keeping the creative process alive, but then also doing that training and finding that repetition that kind of keeps you, you know, with the game mode when it's game time.
It's so interesting to think about the French doing vegan, because that's not what we think of when you think of French cuisine. I mean, they're such masters of protein.
There was some conversation of like, when did vegan become hip in France?
You know? Yeah, but when you say vegan, I mean, they're masters of vegetable cuisine, but vegan takes it to another. There's no sauces, there's no butter reductions, there's
no
nothing.
Cream,
no butter, cream,
no
dairy,
cheese.
There's, it's a significant shift.
I thought you did something interesting in 2015. You, I guess every team tries to anticipate what the protein's going to be.
Right.
And you said, I've got a sense that it's going to be poultry, and so we're going to go for duck. And so you started practicing with duck before the protein was announced.
We did. You know, I mean, you really, you have to push forward, right? You can't wait around until September gets there and be like, all right, let's figure out when it gets here. And so, you know, we looked at the history of what had been done in the past, and, you know, I was like, well, they haven't done a bird in, you know, I think 10 years. So let's just, you know, pun intended, put all of our eggs in one basket here and go for it. And so we did, and we, you know, had duck, and then it was announced that it was guinea hen. And we had worked really hard to kind of come up with a really unique concept with the bird. And it was, you know, a little fist pump when it was announced that it was guinea hen. However, in 2017 training, we were like, okay, we did the same, you know, exercise, and we were like practicing with lamb. You know, kind of saying, all right, it hasn't been lamb for a while, but we didn't see the 30th year anniversary thing coming, where they went back to the original protein from 1987, and that was poulard de Brest. So we were back with bird again.
So we should say that you were the first American to ever win this thing.
Yeah, I was the first American to ever be on the podium, you know, winning silver. Yeah. You know, it was also the first time anyone outside of Europe had ever placed higher than bronze. And, you know, this past year when Matt Peters and Harrison Tyrone and, you know, myself as a coach, you know, won gold, that was the first time we'd ever won. So it was, you know, it was extraordinary. I mean, you mentioned earlier, like, we had never been a serious contender. And in, you know, 2015, we went, nobody really paid attention to us. It was kind of a pat on the back. And, you know, as the competition unfolds, it's kind of like Tiger Woods, you know, nobody follows everybody. Everybody follows Tiger Woods, you know. And so it was kind of like when we started cooking that day, there was really no one around us. I mean, it was kind of just our team. And, you know, as time went on, you know, two judges became four, and four became six, and six became eight. And then before we knew it, we were surrounded. You know, you have kitchen judges walking around kind of analyzing how you're working, and that's 20% of your score as well. So you're also, you know, didn't mention it, but you're in a stadium of 2,500 screaming fans. So there's a marching band, there's drums playing, there's people screaming, faces painted. I mean, I was talking to someone just a few days ago, and they're like, they were there, and they were like, it's like a soccer stadium. They're like, actually, it's louder than a soccer stadium,
really?
You know? And so that's the environment you're in. But as we competed, and, you know, as we finished, you know, there was just this amazing sense. I mean, I think six people came up to us and said, congratulations. You know, that was day one of this competition. We still had a whole day to go through, and they knew we had done something, you know, phenomenal that hadn't been done before, by certainly by our country and perhaps in general. And so, you know, when we won, it was just this, you know, incredible feeling that, but it was also unexpected, you know, winning silver. And then it was really, I think the really rewarding thing of this whole thing is, you know, the respect for your country. And I think a lot of people miss that in this country. Mm-hmm. This is a patriotic event. You know, the driving force for us isn't, you know, whatever recognition or, you know, prestige you get from this. It's really, you're doing something for your country. And to do the thing you love, the craft you enjoy for your country and at that level. And, you know, when we went back in 2017 and the level of respect that was around us, I mean, we were the favorites. Like people, we walked in and people were like, they're there. You know, which was such a phenomenal shift from just 2 years prior where, you know, we were like, I don't even know if we can place on this podium.
In 2015, when you placed silver, mm-hmm. it's what, 2,000 points total?
It's 2,000 points total.
How many points separated gold from silver?
Yeah, it's a sore subject.
I know that's why.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny, though, you mentioned that because the day of the competition, they, you know, after they announced everything and we had taken silver, Norway had won gold. Norway has a phenomenal just a farm team and system around how they approach this. It's really unprecedented. And, you know, when they won gold, we, you know, they showed the awards afterwards and we looked up and we saw that we were only 9 points from gold out of 2,000. And at the moment, it was like, wow, this is unbelievable. We've gone from sixth, like, as the best we've ever done to, like, almost winning this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a few months later, it was like, dang, we were only 9 points from winning mm-hmm. this whole thing.
And I'm sure you replayed it over and over. Yeah. How could we have made up those 9 points?
Not at all.
No, you didn't. Oh, no, you shouldn't.
No, I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into it. And, you know, one of the main things is, you know, nobody's ever won competing on day one. There's a two-day competition, and we were on day one that year. And there's also, there was a 10-point difference between us and Norway on the kitchen score. And you have different judges, different days for that. Uh-huh. So, you know, you could replay all the scenarios. There's the fish plate that got, you know, taken away from us 2 weeks before we left. That could have been a significant shift for us. We talk about that story in the book.
It was amazing. The design of mm-hmm. the plate becomes an important mm-hmm. part of this. And it's kind of, because the book is lavishly illustrated with photos and stuff. So mm-hmm. you have a real sense of, gosh, this really was a unique, and that's part of it too, isn't it? That,
yeah, I mean, I think the goal of the book was to really...
I mean, the physical design of the book.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the physical design. I mean, Martin Kastner was our designer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those listeners who know, like Alinea Restaurant in Chicago, it's kind of the modernist cuisine movement, as some would call it. But, you know, Martin is the design factor behind a lot of those, you know, bacon on a string and the peacock and all these mm-hmm. other things that they do over there. And he's really, you know, he's a blacksmith by trade, artist by education, and a genius by default. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was like, we collaborated, and it's not just the talent that he put into it, but the tenacity that he put forward and whatever it takes attitude. I mean, he worked 40 days straight in 2015 to get our platter finished, flew his brother over from Madrid, and, you know, had six all-nighters in the middle of that, you know, and it was just unbelievable the effort he put in. But, you know, when you look at the competition, presentation's 20% of your score, but really it's, if you don't have that X factor moment when you present that platter, I was there in 2013, first time I'd ever seen the competition, and it was kind of when I caught the bug for this whole thing. And when Francis' platter went up, it was this beautiful gold platter that said Versailles on the front, and it was modeled after the Versailles Gardens, and the centerpiece was this beef rossini that, you know, as a chef cooking for 20 years, I still ask myself, how did they do that, you know? And that's really, the whole stadium goes quiet, you know, when that presentation happens. And that's really all year long what we were after, you know.
So
that
there
moment
has to be, as you said, the wow factor. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
If that's missing, it doesn't matter how great the food is, you're not going
to
win.
I mean, you have to have every aspect of this, right? It's like, you know, when you look at diving or gymnastics, there's always that difficulty factor, and then there's the art factor for, you know, the figure skating and things. So, you know, you have to have that presentation moment, but again, the most important thing is the taste and flavor of this food. 40% mm-hmm. is your score based on that.
We'll take a break at that point. Chasing Bocuse, America's Journey to the Culinary World Stage, written in its entirety by Philip Tessier. His name is spelled T-E-S-S-I-E-R, with contributions from mentor founders Daniel Beaulieu, Thomas Keller, and Jerome Bocuse, Paul Bocuse's son. It's a miraculous book. It was spellbinding. There were moments mm-hmm. I was so emotionally mm-hmm. involved in reading this book, it almost brought tears to my eyes. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect my reaction to be this way. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be a little more cut and dry, but you bring an emotional intensity to the book that is, it's hard to imagine unless you read it.
Well, and physical. I mean, what you did, I mean, just the practice, the focus. And when we come back, you have to talk a bit about your selection of your kumi.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash in the KS Arlo Kitchen. And by the way, a wonderful holiday gift to one of our listeners, an autographed copy of the book at the end of the show.
Weather every 10 minutes mornings, every 30 minutes all the time on FM News Talk Radio, 103.5 FM and 94.5 FM, KSRO.
The 2017-18 season is underway within Weill Hall at Sonoma State University's Green Music Center. Once again, this season offers a great variety of entertainment. Sunday, December 10th at 3 p.m., the Philharmonic Baroque Orchestra and Chorale perform Handel's Messiah, with Nicholas McGeegan conducting. On Friday, December 15th, celebrate the 30th anniversary of Windham Hill's Winter Solstice, featuring William Ackerman, Barbara Higbee, Alex Degrassi, and Todd Boston. Then Saturday, December 16th, it's a vivacious Celtic Christmas from Cherish the Ladies, one of the top Celtic groups in the world. It's an evening of captivating arrangements and stunning step dancing. An evening at Weill Hall at Sonoma State University's Green Music Center offers an experience you'll never forget. For tickets and more info, visit gmc.sonoma.edu.
SCAN Health Plan has an important announcement for residents of Napa and Sonoma counties who may have been affected by the recent fires. The Medicare Advantage annual enrollment period has been extended for the residents of your area until December 31st. That means you still have time to select a plan for 2018. Call SCAN today and speak with a representative who can answer your questions and provide the help you may need to choose a SCAN Medicare Advantage plan. Call 1-888-716-SCAN, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week, or visit scan2018.com.
When you're hiring, you want qualified candidates fast, and it can be hard to know where to find them. More than 3 million businesses use Indeed.com, the world's number one job site. Whether you need entry-level or highly skilled employees, Indeed helps you find great talent and make the right hire. Indeed is offering new users a $50 credit to give their first job post premium visibility as a sponsored job. Redeem this offer at Indeed.com/promo. That's Indeed.com/promo. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Philip Tessier is joining John Ash and me, Steve Garner, live today in the KS Arlo Kitchen on this December 2nd. Chasing Bocuse, the name of the new book, an astounding work, America's Journey to the Culinary World Stage, chronicling Philip's captaining of the 2015 team that came in silver. The Americans had never come up closer than higher than seventh or so. And then this year, 2017, winning the gold as Philip was the coach for this year's team. You wrote that I was an accomplished chef, but not a competition chef. Mm-hmm. Talk about the dream. John, were you going to ask about the training involved, the conditioning involved?
Well, but the physical conditioning, but also the mental conditioning. And mm-hmm. you, in the book, describe it so well. It's like, we're there with you, you know, that. And, right. and your choice of a Comey, of your mm-hmm. assistant, to do this. You chose a young guy. I mean, he's even younger looking than you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they have to be 22 or younger. Yeah, so yeah. there's, by default, they're baby faces. Yeah. You know? And so, yeah, I mean, I think when you look at there's always been a significant divide between competition chefs and, you know, let's say Michelin starred chefs. And, you know, that was a big intimidation factor for me. Mm-hmm. You know, here I am competing against these, you know, seasoned veterans of competition, you know, in this final competition. And, you know, for myself, I never really competed. I mean, unless you count, you know, the stuff I did in culinary school.
But also daily, you worked at the French Laundry, mm-hmm. the executive chef there, Per Se in New York. You worked at the top restaurant, so you're competing every day to have make perfect food every day.
Right, and that was really the discovery we made along the way, is that, you know, the tenacity, the mental fortitude, the dedication, and the creativity that we demonstrate every day, you know, working at places like French Laundry and Per Se and La Bernardin, you know, it's really not that much different. You're just organizing it in a different way. But the training and the preparation that goes into it, I mean, we just had the attitude of whatever it takes, you know, and Skyler Stover was my commis in 2015, and we did CrossFit 5 days a week. We took French lessons. We, you know, worked 6-7 days a week when it required it through that last 4 months, especially. And, you know, you're going full tilt all year long.
Well, because it's so intense. Mm-hmm. I mean, the intensity of that, it's like a marriage almost. I mean,
that's a good way to describe it in many ways. You know, I mean, I remember, you know, with Skyler especially, and, you know, there's several parts in the book where, you know, that was one of the big challenges, you know, getting someone, especially at that age, and even challenging myself to, you know, stick with it. There's times when you're burnt out. There's times where you thought you were going to have a great week and it didn't go that way. There's the story in the book about us going to Lyon for a training run in November and putting all this expectation on having this amazing practice run. So we go back in January and say we've been there, done that. And basically that was kind of the worst run we ever did. You know, it was 2 hours late, like things didn't come out right. And, you know, a lot of it, you know, Skyler had some struggles, and I think that was the real turning point for him when we kind of realized, like, man, we could do this in January and fail. And watching him and his shift from kind of burnout, do I have to kind of what else do you need? What can I do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember telling him that day before we competed, like, there's no one else I'd rather have, you know, in this kitchen today than you. And, I think that was 100% genuine. You know, he had really come full circle from, you know, a lot of the challenges we had and was ready to go.
There were so many variables in the competition itself between what the judges might suddenly disallow as mm-hmm. they walk through your kitchen in the last hour before you start cooking, to items not arriving through customs. Talk about that pressure in the 2015.
Yeah, I mean, I think Richard Rosendale, who competed in 2013 and was part of the coaching team with us, you know, my year, was, you know, said something once that was like really kind of stuck with me. He's like, focus on what you can control and don't worry about everything else. But that being said, you know, when we got there, everything got stuck in customs for 3 days. And, you know, at the time there was kind of the question of, well, when is it going to come out? And it's like, could be tomorrow, could be a week. And I'm like, a week, it's game over. You know, our whole kitchen was in the mail, basically. And so that was super stressful. We lost a whole day of training. We had to rush to kind of do our final training run and then rush
product
to flip everything
too.
Over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking earlier off the air, but it, you know, it really takes a country. You know, the French Laundry Garden, their team, Aaron Kiefer and Kate, who were just amazing all through our training year to get us what we needed, and then ship stuff every day with the team at Bouchon as well in Yountville, and you know, Chef's Garden in Ohio was we sent them wild fennel seeds that they grew for us and harvested the one plant that matured that showed up the day we were going to go. And you know, it's all of these things that are factors. And then yes, the judges coming through, you know, fortunately they do this where they come through the kitchen and they make sure everyone's on the same, you know, playing field, nobody's cheating. But there's also a lot of vague rules and you don't really know sometimes if what I'm doing is right. And you know, we had brought some cured foie gras and they deemed that as, you know, processed, but in our minds it was fine. And you know, it was fine. Like, we just got some of their sponsored stuff and used it. But you always go with this kind of gut feeling of like what's going to happen. And as soon as you're through that inspection process, you kind of like,
who are the judges?
So yeah, that's a great question. The judges, so the judges of the food, the tasting panel, are actually the presidents from every country, which is actually pretty challenging as a chef, thinking, okay, I need to cook food that's understandable and a positive experience for 24 judges from 24 different countries. And so we really have to kind of expand our vision of what we're doing to include that. And then the kitchen judges are kind of the committee. So they're mostly the French committee there, as well as some of the coaches are kind of pulled in on the days they're not coaching to help that committee as well and make marks on the kitchen score. So for the most part, you're cooking for the world.
And you've judged mm-hmm. certain aspects. What has been your judging experience?
I think actually judging is one of the key things that I want every candidate to have as part of their experience before they go, because you really understand what difference it makes when your food's hot, when it's seasoned mm-hmm. correctly, when everything, you know, we put so much into the food in here that sometimes, you know, the appearance or presentation can overtake the flavor, you know, and that's something that we never can allow to happen. And so when you see that happen, it really resonates with you. But you know, you're looking in the kitchen. I mean, it's interesting. Like, you can go and you see 12 guys or girls, you know, cooking, and you can tell almost immediately who the top three are, just by their focus, organization, the way they communicate. Are they positive? You know, what happens when something doesn't go quite right? How do they respond? And you know, their confidence level. And then when it comes to tasting the food, I mean, it's, you know, how does everything come together on the plate as well? Like, sometimes you'll have something that tastes really great here and really great here, but when you eat them together, like, you know, and they're on the same plate together. So these are all the things that you have to think about. And, you know, obviously, again, as we mentioned earlier, like, the presentation of it is a key moment, where it's kind of like I view it as like the movie trailer. You know, like, if you watch a great movie trailer, you're gonna walk in that theater with really high expectations. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when you're able to deliver that, you know, it just kind of affirms what you had expected, and that's really the goal.
We'll take a break at that point with the bottom of the hour. And I love how many affirmations you include in the book. I felt like I was actually being coached by John Wooden. And you do write in the opening part of the book, you attribute several quotes to John Wooden. Was he an inspiration? Did you read his books?
Yeah, I did. You know, I mean, I think one of the reasons the quotes are in there is, you know, through all my time at, you know, with the Thomas Keller Group, you know, being there 11 years, you know, it was one of the things we did every day was we always had a quote on the past, you know, kind of a source of inspiration, maybe a focal point or something to remind ourselves. And so we did that through our own training. And so the quotes in the book are the key ones that we took from those training years. And, you know, with John Wooden, I mean, I think he has such a sense of team, right? Mm-hmm. And team purpose. And that's really what the Boku Store and this competition is all about. You know, it's all about the team.
Success is never final. Failure is never final. It is courage that counts. We'll be back with Philip Tessier. The book is Chasing Boku's: America's Journey to the Culinary World Stage. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO Kitchen.
FM News Talk Radio, North County 103.5, South County 94.5, KSRO.
I'm Steve Cabazet, president of My Insurance Solutions, with an update on Medicare open enrollment. Because of the wildfires, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services have extended a special election period for beneficiaries affected by the fires to December 31st. You still have time if you are unable to make changes to your Medicare Advantage and prescription drug plans. New to Medicare or turning 65, you may also be eligible for an extension. You may have seen our mobile unit or were helped by one of our volunteers with the Love Your Neighbor Project. Our agents help Medicare eligibles connect to items lost or destroyed in the fires, like prescription drugs and hearing aids. But you only have until December 31st. To find out if you're eligible, call 877-543-3221 to reach a licensed sales agent or attend one of our community events. For more information, visit MyInsuranceSolutionsInc.com.
The holiday season is here. There is no better place to help you create that special environment than the Gift Horse in Healdsburg. Whether it's home decor, dining, tabletop, linens, or kitchenware, we can inspire the decorator in you. Hi, I'm Carol, owner of the Gift Horse. I invite you to come see all the beautiful, special things we've added this season.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
Home decor and more.
If you love to set a beautiful table for the holidays, the Gift Horse is the perfect place to find wonderful linens by April Cornell, elegant tableware, Lennox wine glasses, and colonial candles. We are ready for the holidays.
From our door to your door.
We're next to Garrity's Hardware in Healdsburg.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
Home decor and more.
Open every day 9 to 6.
You know, there's nothing like sinking into a luxurious hot spring spa, especially if it's in your very own backyard. Hot spring spas are the number one brand in the world, so you know there'll be a hot tub to fit your home and lifestyle perfectly. Vacation in a hot tub every day with your own hot spring spa from the Hot Tub Store. 5 locations in Santa Rosa, Vacaville, West Sacramento, Rockland, and Folsom. And online at hottubstore.com. The Hot Tub Store. Every day made better.
At PG&E, we want to help our customers and the communities we serve recover from the Northern California wildfires. You can get help at PG&E's dedicated customer connections website at pge.com/CCO, where new service installations, temporary construction power, or other services can be initiated and tracked. To get started, please visit pge.com/CCO.
Hearing the spellbinding story of changing Bocuse, America's journey to the culinary world stage, with author of the new book, Philip Tessier. And it's a remarkable, riveting story. We'll keep you on the edge of your seat. The narrative is spellbinding. The photography, well, if you've ever looked at any of the French Laundry cookbooks, this is the style and the quality of the food that you presented both in 2015 and 17. There's also a lot of recipes in the book. I would think most of them are probably over the head of most home cooks, but it is so inspiring to see what is involved in making these dishes. And some of them, like the avocado mousse, I think that's one that I could probably do, and that looked really good. So there were ones within my ability to translate.
Yeah, I mean, the recipes in the book, the goal was to put the competition recipes in there. Not that people are going to venture out, although I talked to some people who are going to attempt to do so. It's really to show kind of everything that goes into it, you know, the number of ingredients, the amount of technique, the molds and everything. But I also wanted to make sure that there was food in there that, you know, the average home cook could do. And so we put recipes from, you know, the staff meals we had as a team and some of the
they were great.
Classics.
Toad in the hole.
Right? Yeah, toad in the hole.
Eggs and toast.
You know? And then, you know, some of the Lyonnaise classics, you know, the Frisée au lardon salad and tarte tatin, and then also some of the techniques that we pulled out from the competition. There's a simple brown butter sauce in there that we have in there, and the way that we did the duck confit, you know, just simple things like using a pressure cooker that, you know,
that
can
was
transform
wild
things.
That you used a pressure cooker and you said you would,
but it makes so much sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that is that how restaurants would do duck confit? No, they wouldn't.
Well, we actually use a pressure cooker increasingly in the kitchen now. We actually make our sauces in the pressure cooker. Mm-hmm. We, you know, duck confit, normally it would be something you'd be cooking for 12 to 18 hours and slow, and, you know, you can make it in 45 minutes. You know, and the great thing about the way it is in the book is you put it in a jar, you cook it in there, and you can just take that and literally just put it in your fridge, and it's there when you need it.
When I read that, I thought, oh, no, it's going to blow up. There's going to be, you know, I'm one of those old school, the pressure cooker.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
glass everywhere.
You know, it's interesting, like, people are terrified of the pressure cooker, but there's a lot of people, you know, using electric pressure cookers out there today that aren't thinking of it as that. And, you know, pressure cooker, it can be, you know, intimidating. You hear the stories, but it's one of the greatest tools in the kitchen. And, you know, if you just follow basic principles, it's super safe. So,
you know, it's funny, in this book, which is truly the temple of gastronomy, in the collaboration, the chef's section, there was a recipe for a radish tartlet with maître d'hôtel, the butter, and the first words are use 10 slices of Wonder Bread.
Right.
Well, how did that come about?
Yeah, I love it. It's kind of a playful thing. So Matt Kirkley, that's his recipe. And actually, we're going to be demonstrating that dish next Friday at the CIA campus.
I was going to ask whether you're going to do that. That's December 15th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at Copia. It's $35. You're going to do the culinary demo, the tasting, the book signing, meet and greet with you and who else did you say?
Yeah, so we dropped the cost to $15 because we want to open the doors for people to get in and not have something keep them away. But so Matt Kirkley will be there. He's the new candidate. He's an assistant coach for us last year. He is the new Team USA captain, and he will be there. It's actually a really amazing story with him. I mean, he's been working last 2 years to gain 3 Michelin stars at Qua restaurant in San Francisco. Finally received them 2 weeks before the U.S. competition, competed and won, and so now has left Qua after, you know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Like, I mean, chefs, you know, literally kill themselves over not getting 3 Michelin stars, and to finally get them and achieve that goal and to walk away from it for this just shows you, you know, the dedication and the value that this has for him. But so he'll be there, and then Robert Sulatiki, who's our new Team USA head coach, who was my assistant coach last year and has been around the competition for many years, will be there as well. So it's really, we're going to show a great video about the competition, do a book signing, and then, you know, Matt Kirkley's going to actually demonstrate how to use Wonder Bread in a high level.
In the radish tartlet?
Right.
Oh, okay.
So it's a playful take on it.
Marvelous. So there's a wonderful little quote. You don't have to do this, but would you read it?
Sure.
This little, it begins here in the As Chefs, which talks about the difference between exactly what you were talking about, mm-hmm. the being a chef in a restaurant and being in competition.
Right. Is that, how far do you want to read?
Just those two short paragraphs.
Okay. Yeah. So this is a quote from Matthew Kirkley, who, you know, throughout the book we have excerpts from mm-hmm. different chefs who are part of the journey. We wanted the story to be told in a multi-voice narrative, and so this was a great section that he wrote. So he says, as chefs, we exist in a world of instant gratification. We conceive a dish, execute, and serve it, and get immediate feedback via our guests and our staff, though we rarely pause to contemplate it, as we are accustomed to moving quickly on the next task. This is what sustains us in our work. All chefs have a servant's heart and eagerness to please others through our cooking. But as a candidate for the Bocuse d'Or, you are removed from that daily basic joy. You exist in a vacuum. There's no guest, only you. You have a blank white sheet of paper to start from, and none of the crayons you are used to using are within reach, nor will most of them be available by the time the competition arrives.
It's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And let's take a break at that point. Mm-hmm. We'll come right back with Philip Tessier. The new book is Chasing Bocuse, America's Journey to the Culinary World Stage. It is lavish. It is intensely moving, the story of America in 2015, winning a silver at the Bocuse, and then in 2017, winning the gold, the best in the world. One of you will get an autographed copy, a wonderful present from Philip and from KSRO after the show at noon today.
North Bay play-by-play home of the Golden State Warriors and Oakland Raiders. FM News Talk Radio 103.5, 94.5, KSRO.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market won the Best Sonoma County Farmers Market Award by the Press Democrat's Reader's Choice. To find out why, shop the market for your holiday feasts. Enjoy selections of fresh and organic greens, mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, turnips, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash, along with seasonal pomegranates, persimmons, apples, and walnuts. Meet the local ranchers who offer a variety of quality meats, beef, chicken, and pork. Choose fresh fish and crab from a variety of seafood vendors and sample local dairy products. Everything you need to create the freshest holiday dinners is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Remember to check out the creations of the many talented artisans for holiday gift giving. Open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 p.m. at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
At K-Tech Automotive and Pauline's Automotive, Kate and her team know something. When your car's in the shop, your life's on hold. So their job is to get you going again. From quick, reliable service, repairs, and maintenance, to a loaner car if you need it. And a cup of coffee and a smile when you come in doesn't hurt either. Don't let your car put your life on hold. Visit Kate and the team at K-Tech Automotive and Pauline's Automotive in Sebastopol. And get going again.
This holiday season, see what makes Corix such a time-honored favorite in Santa Rosa.
At Corix, we think holiday gift shopping should be fun and easy. So once again, we've turned our store into a holiday wonderland with gifts for everyone on your list. From Dickens villages to tabletop games and puzzles. From gorgeous 2018 wall calendars to the phenomenal work of Sonoma County's best artists, find it at Corix and get it wrapped for free.
Corix Stationery, Gallery, and Gifts, 637 4th Street, downtown Santa Rosa.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
With Philip Tessier in the KSRO kitchen, Chasing Bocuse, America's Journey to the Culinary World Stage. How important was having your own custom-built replication of the Bocuse kitchen from France, built in Napa Valley, to gaining the gold in 2017? Was it real important? Do you think that was one of the critical components?
Yeah, I mean, I think our goal is that when we go there and we compete, we want to be home. We want to be in that kitchen and feel like this is home. Like our equipment's there. We had an amazing shipping company that pro bono shipped all of our equipment over, so we could avoid that whole situation with customs that we encountered in 2015. And that was a game changer. You know, we shipped it on Friday. Everything was there. All of our, I mean, you're talking about, you know, hundreds of pounds of equipment and the whole kitchen basically traveling over there. And so, in 2014, we trained, in a kitchen next door to the French Laundry that was, you know, a nice residential kitchen, but still a residential kitchen. And we kind of taped down tables and we're like, all right, this is the, actually this shelf here is the bottom of that shelf over there. And, you know, you're just trying to make it work. And so, you know, one of the goals for me was like, I really want these guys to have the right burners, you know, the right oven, the right location, you know, the dimensions and everything. And so I worked with the Heston Commercial team to build a replica kitchen at our space that we have in Napa Valley. And, you know, seeing the team train in there all year long, just being in that physical space, it just brings a level of confidence and muscle memory to everything you're doing. You know, when you get over there and you're in that final space, it is a game changer.
Do other countries have replication kitchens like we have?
Yeah, in fact, in a crazy story, in 2011, one of the chefs from Norway actually took his replica kitchen and had a semi-trailer that he then put that kitchen into the back of, created all the ventilation and everything, and then drove that to France so he could practice there when he got there as well. So people go to great lengths to win this.
So out of this, does new equipment, new tools, do they emerge because of the special requirements of what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, so the kitchen itself is 6 by 3 meters. Uh-huh. You get 2 refrigerated tables, a sink, 4 burners, and an oven. So
yeah.
that's pretty standard, and that's all you get, really. And then, you know, as the team, you bring everything else. And Martin Kastner, who we mentioned earlier, is our designer. We've developed hundreds of tools and pieces to help us do anything from, you know, be able to set a mold better to how to sharpen a carrot on a KitchenAid, which was a crazy thing we did. But, you know, we're really actually looking at this year and looking at the past years of taking all of these things that we've created and bringing them into the commercial kitchen. So we really want to develop a line of tools from all this that is really kind of be a game changer in the commercial kitchens across the country. So I think we're going to see that very soon.
And this kitchen is located on a vineyard in Napa?
So the kitchen we trained at in 2016 for the 17 competition was at Heston Vineyards in Napa Valley. So it's on the far east side of Napa. And so the team trained there all year. We built that space for them. They had, you know, our team increased. We had 5 or 6 assistants that year. And so everything grew, the support, the financially, everything just really just blossomed. And to the point where this year, the CIA campus, the Culinary Institute of America, has a campus now in Napa City called Copia on the east side, which is where our presentation will be next Friday. Mm-hmm. And they are going to give us a space there for a permanent Boku store kitchen, which is super exciting. So we're building a 2-scale kitchen. We're gonna have, you know, an area where we can do our tastings and things, and then we also want to put in a museum kind of out there where people can see these platters on display.
So would you talk about this thing that's gonna happen next week? Because people can come, can't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, having a physical place on your not being gypsies is really exciting for us. And you know, having somewhere where people who hear about the story or even just come across it when they're there, you know, it'll be up on the second floor across from the teaching kitchen. There'll be Chuck Williams Museum up there, and then in the hallway we're going to be working on building a museum that guests of the area can come and see and understand and watch a video and get informed and you know, get excited about being part of this. I mean, the goal for this is really we want people to follow, be alongside this, be supportive, you know, come to France, cheer us on. You know, Norway has 1,000 people in the stands, you know, for their team. And so it's really kind of giving people an opportunity to engage with us, be alongside us, and get excited about, you know, what Team USA is doing year after year.
Oh, it's really important for us to honor this, even if I know people listening to the show obviously are into food or consider themselves foodies and really wanting to be cutting edge, but this should be celebrated by everyone in the country, and it's still very much under the radar. Mm-hmm. You ask the average person on the street, they've never heard of the organization. They don't know that America was deemed the best in the world in a culinary competition, and maybe the CIA's, now that they're incorporating this, it'll expose a lot more people to the work that the organization's
doing. Yeah, I mean, in many ways, it's just the beginning, right? Like, one of the challenges is it's hard to follow, right? To follow the team and the competition. It's something that we continue to try to work on. And, you know, the only way to watch this thing is on a live stream, you know, on a French website in French and English. And so that's something that needs to change as well. But, you know, the interesting thing is, like, when Norway first won back in the early 90s, you know, it took them, you know, 4 to 6, 8 years to really get the garnering of this as a thing in their country, as of some prestige. And so, but now it's like the guys who compete, you know, when they win, they're like, I mean, the guy last year, he was like, I've been dreaming of this since I was 9 years old. And it's nationally televised. In fact, the only place I've been recognized in the street for Boku Store was on a ferry in Norway.
There was a quote in here from Thomas mm-hmm. Keller about the most significant things in his life when mm-hmm. he was asked to recount them. And I mean, goodness knows he's gotten all kinds of mm-hmm. accolades and had all kinds of success. But he said it was the winning of the Boku Store that became the most important, you know, aspect of what he's accomplished.
Yeah, I think the thing that's, I mean, and it's humbling for him to say that, mm-hmm. you know, having yeah. best restaurant in the world for 2 years and, yeah. you know, two different restaurants or three Michelin stars. But, you know, I think the thing that shifts this from, it's not just a personal achievement, you know, it's an international achievement. And I mean, the feeling, if I was to sit here and try to describe that feeling of being on the top of that podium and having the flag up there and the anthem playing, I mean, you know, you ask any Olympic athlete what that feels like. It's exceptional. It's just, can't find the words.
Philip, you brought your son today. Mm-hmm. His name is?
Justin.
Yeah. Justin, I'd like to ask you, what is your favorite number between 1 and 15? Think about that, and what's your favorite number between 1 and 15? Just say it into the microphone.
8.
Eight. Caller number 8 at 636-1350 will win this autographed copy of Chasing Bokus by Dad, Philip Tessier. Caller number 8 at 636-1350. We'll be back after this.
Hello, Sonoma County. I'm Digital Pro Kim Commando, and I'm here Sundays, noon to 3 on KSRO.